Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 22nd day of the month of Shvat. This is the Women's Chumash here. We're in the middle of Parshas Noach. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Bereshit. The conclusion of Chapter 7, Perek Zayin. And what we're going to focus on today is something that troubled Rashi, the Ramban, the Radak, and for some reason a lot of people make a lot of, have a lot to say about this particular issue. So, if you remember, the Torah enumerated more than one time who perished, who was eliminated during the flood. So if you go back to Pasuk Chaf Aleph for just a second, Perek Zayin Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayigva kol basar haromes ala aretz, ba'ofu ba'vehima u'bachaya, v'chol hasheretz hasheretz ala aretz, v'chol ha'adam. So anything that crawls on the ground, birds, animals, chayot, and again, creepy things that creep on the ground, and every person. Kol asher nishmat ruach chayim be'apav, mikol asher becharach be'isuv. Anything that has nishmat ruach chayim. So we already asked, if you remember last week, it seems to be repetitive of v'chol ha'adam, so we said whatever we said. Vayimach es kol ha'yakum asher al pnei adama. Me'adam ad bima ad remes v'adof ha'shamayim v'yimachu min ha'aretz v'yishaer ach noach v'asher ito bativa. V'yibru ha'mayim al ha'aretz chamishim u'ma'at yom. The waters overpowered the land for 150 days. So if you remember correctly, Rashi had mentioned in Pasuk Chaf Bet, the Pasuk emphasizes, Kol asher nishmat ruach chayim ba'apav, mikol asher becharava meitu. Becharava. What's a becharava? The land, dry land. Anything that is on dry land died. So Rashi says, "Asher becharava, velo dagim shebiya." Fish were not eliminated during the mabul; they survived. So you can say, "Okay, I can understand that." Why can you understand that from a simple pshat point of view? Yes. What? But what about little creeps?
They're in the water.
Because they're in the water. Very simple. The simple pshat is they live in the water. So how can an abundance of water be a problem if you live in the water? So there's a flood. So Zainazai, fish survive in water. So the simple pshat is the reason why, that's why the Torah emphasized, Kol asher becharava, anything on dry land. Because on dry land, you can't survive if you are flooded. But if you live, not becharava, if you live, if your natural habitat is what? Is water, then there is no problem. That's what Rashi says. The Ramban elaborates on this. So if you take the sheet for a moment that I passed out. It's up here. There you go. It says on the top, on the left hand side, page Kuftes. Page Kuftes. On the reverse side, post page Kufches. Kufches. The Ramban starts earlier. So in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, I bracketed for you, three lines into the Ramban. On the right hand side, so we'll start. Well, actually, we'll start at the beginning. Vayimach et kol ha'yakum asher al pnei adama. Pasuk Chaf Gimel in the Ramban. Achar she'omar vayigva kol basar. Once it already states in Pasuk Chaf Aleph that every living creature on the ground, on the earth, was already extinguished, perished. Hosif lomar vayimach. The Torah changes its expression in verse 23, not Vayikva, but Vayimach. Not Vayikva, but Vayimach. And what does Vayimach mean? Shenimchu hagufot v'yihu l'mayim. Shenimchu hagufot. That's a shenimchu hagufot. Erase. So what happens? What happened to a human being? What happened? He. But if I v'yihu l'mayim. What he like melted exactly. Nimuach. He melted and simply became water. That's what happened to him. So the Torah is adding, not just that he perished, but every living creature, in effect, was converted into water. Shenimchu agufot, they became melted down. Vayulamayim. Ki'inyan umacha el meha marim. Just as it states in relationship to the meha marim, which the Torah describes at the beginning of Parshat Naso, what happens to a woman who is suspected of having an affair, umacha el mehamarim. Ki hayu hamayim roschin kidivi rabuseinu. The waters were boiling hot. And if the waters are boiling hot, what happens to a human being? Not just that he drowned, but he decomposed and became part of the water. So if that's the case, what do you think happened to the fish? Exact same thing. They also decomposed. That's going to be the rest of the Ramban. That's going to be the Ramban. The challenge between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the fish. By attempting to drown the fish, do they have an escape route? So I'm just laying the groundwork on why is the Ramban so concerned about these fish. We'll see. Avalim kein yu adagim meitim. If that's the case, if the heat melted every body, so if I am melted, a tuna fish can be, or a salmon can be melted just as easily. Their body can decompose and be converted into water, just like a human being. In which case, the Torah is telling us not only did what? An animal dies and bird dies. But the Torah is in effect adding this particular pasuk to include the fish. That's the reason why you have the repetition between Vayimach and Vayikva, 21 and 23. Avol imkein hayudag emesim ve'ulai hayak moshe bereshis rabba. Maybe, says the Ramban, the Midrash is correct. Namely, what is the Midrash? Midrash, Mikol Asher Becharava, Drash, Velo Dagim Shebeyah. Velo Dagim Shebeyah. So whereas Rashi, I asked you 5 seconds ago, when Rashi made this comment, Mikol Asher Becharava, Meitu, anything on dry land died. I asked you, is this, you know, far-fetched? When you infer that what? Birds did not. Everybody here felt that, excuse me, fish. Fish did not. Everybody here felt that's the simple pshat. That's the simple pshat for emphasizing. Mikol asher becharava metu. The Ramban does not believe that that's the simple pshat. What is that? That's a midrash. That the phrase mikol asher becharava metu does not necessarily teach us that fish survived. I have to come on to the words of the midrash to infer becharava, that is to teach us that fish stayed alive. And he says, maybe they are right. V'yesh omrim, af hein b'chlal ne'esafin, ela shebarcho l'ukiyanus, u'mikol makom nitzolu hadagim. Others in the Midrash say that what happened? What happened to fish? They went to which ocean? Ukiyanus. Which ocean is that? Which ocean is that? What? The what? Indian Ocean. Some say it's the Indian Ocean. Ukiyanus. That's the way it appears because it's near Israel. Near Israel. Some say it's the Atlantic Ocean. So his point is that they experienced a change in their lives as well. So you had a fish in the Hudson River, but he somehow manages to escape to where? To the Ukiyanus, umisham nitzolu, and there they were saved. Then umikol makom nitzol hadagim. Now, what's the point of the midrash entertaining that particular possibility? And he writes, ushnei hadeot ha'elu efshariyim. Both of these explanations that I just offered are possible. Both of them are possible. Ki yitachein shememei ha'mabul haroschim yisarvu bayamim. It is possible that the waters of the mabul, which are boiling hot, will eventually mix with what? With the other waters of the world. No doubt. So turn it over. V'yichamemu, on the top of the page, V'yichamemu, on top of the Ramban, on the right hand side, V'yichamemu el yonei hayam bulvad. Which waters should there be a converging of the waters of the flood with waters of natural waters of the Hudson River? Which part of the Hudson River will be impacted by the hot boiling water? Only the top. V'hadagim yavo be'imke hametzulot. The fish will what? Swim down to the bottom, v'yichyusham, and they will be able to survive. So the Ramban says, you can entertain the possibility that the waters were boiling hot. So in his first interpretation, if because of the fact that they were boiling hot and we melted, what happened to all the fish? They melted as well. Says the Ramban, no, I can entertain both possibilities. The waters were boiling hot, and yet the fish were survived, just as the Midrash does claim, because what happens? The waters eventually merged, the waters of the flood eventually merged with other waters, but fish have an escape route. Even if the waters are boiling hot, it's only the top level of the Hudson River. But if they go 20 feet down, it's not going to be boiling hot, and they will be able to survive. They will be able to survive. And if that's the case, what's the emphasis of Mikol Asher Becharava? What's the emphasis of Mikol Asher Becharava? What are you emphasizing? That where did the rains actually come? Where did the rains actually fall? On where? Only on land. They did not fall directly what? On the water. So then, whenever there was a spillover, it spills over to your natural, to your Hudson River, to your East River, to whatever it is, to the Appalachian Mountains, to the Mississippi River. What happens? It's the top level only. Top level only. Now, is there anything to get all excited about this? Rambat's playing, you know, a good part of ink space to telling us what happened to these fish. Anything you want to suggest why they survived, why they had to survive? Why can't the Ramban entertain the simple pshat? The water was boiling, I melted, cows melted, bird, a fish melted. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you were assuming that every bug on this earth sinned, but a fish didn't. That's the only thing that didn't sin. Possible. That's possible. Yes? Okay, that's very good. I'm going to leave it. Just hold on a second. Yeah?
Noah didn't take any fish.
Ah! Ah, exactly. If you remember correctly, part of Noah's task is to enable mankind, the way it is, to survive. If he wanted to have fish survive, what would he have to do? He'd have to take fish into the teva with him. Now fish need what? Water in order to survive. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu calculated, this is many how explained the Ramban, that calculated that since there was no way to save the fish within the Teva, because to bring bowls of water for each of them is just problematic when you're on a boat, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make a decision that in order for the fish to survive post-Khurban, they have to survive during the Khurban. That's explanation number one. So the fact that it's not so much that they survived, that for some reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make it such that fish survive, because he promised that that the earth, the world, will be sustained and perpetuated after the Churban exactly the way it was pre-Churban. So can you imagine having a Kiddush at a Shal Shudas and not have any herring? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, if you're having a little herring, he had to save every species, schmaltz herring and the pickled herring, had to save all of these herrings. And that's why they did not survive. That's one explanation. They're not killed. That's why they're not killed. So Debbie suggests that what? That there is a second reason, perhaps, that they received a special bracha. What bracha did the fish get? What bracha did they fish? What? Good. The issue is that the man's population emulates that of fish. V'yidgu larov bekerav haaretz. V'yidgu larov bekerav haaretz. And that phrase appears in Parshas Bereishis, that bidgas hayam. Bidgas hayam. So according to a second interpretation, the fish somehow have become symbolic of bracha for mankind. Not only Am Yisrael, for mankind. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately allows the fish to remain alive to give man an eternal symbol that what? That there will be a fulfillment of the Yirdgu Birdgas Hayam, of what? Of a bracha that mankind will ultimately survive. Sometimes when a situation is so dire, the people who are chosen to survive don't really believe that they are going to survive. They don't believe it. And as Noah exits the Teva, we will see that he entertains enormous doubt as to whether or not it is worth to rebuild this world. And many people have, spoken to Shoah victims and survivors, and they could not believe that it's worth rebuilding this world. So sometimes what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is create a symbol to mankind that I will necessarily give my promise that despite the fact that I am what? Destroying everybody, I guarantee you that my promise that Noah is going to survive will indeed take place. I'll give you an illustration on a different level. I mentioned this at the Mishnah Shir last week, and those of you who were here maybe 25 years ago when we did the Parshat Shlach should remember this. It's Bamidbar chapter 15. It's right after the Meraglim. Mentioned this last? Correct. So look at Bamidbar chapter 15. And you'll see something that the Torah operates with. A very unusual method which the Torah operates with. So as I said last week, and I've mentioned here several times, whenever the Torah presents a halakha in the middle of the narrative, you have to ask a question, why is this halakha here? It doesn't belong here. There are sections of the Torah that are devoted to halakhot. Pure halakhot. We'll read one this coming Shabbat. Chapter 21, 22, and 23 of Sefer Shemot. Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. All of Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, three Masechtos, built on one parsha of the Torah. Every pasuk talks about a law. Every single pasuk talks about a law. Vayikra chapter 19, Parshat Kedoshim, only laws. Only laws. So there are sections of the Torah that present law, and there is not a word of the narrative. Then there are other sections of the Torah that present the narrative, the unfolding history of Am Yisrael. And you can recognize them very easily. But if in the middle of a narrative you have a halakha presented, you have to ask, Ma piton? It's like a Kodesh Baruch Hu woke up and said, oh, Maishallah, I forgot to put something in there. Yeah, I forgot. It belongs to us. I forgot to put... What's going on here? This chapter 14 describes the Meraglim. Chapter 15 says, I want to teach you about the mitzvah of challah. And when you take water and flour and make a dough, You know, ladies, you should be mafrish challah. Very nice. Where does this belong? Where does the description of the mitzvah of havrashat challah belong? Tell me where you think it belongs.
Shabbos.
What?
Shabbos.
In Shabbos? Why in Shabbos? Why in the discussion about Shabbos we talk about havrashat challah?
Because you're making lechonisna for Shabbos.
Okay, that's possible, but you have to eat on... Did you eat yesterday? Oh, so you need bread for yesterday too. Not just for Shabbos. So where would you find such a... What do you do with challah? What do you do with challah? Right, so it should be the parsha of Sefer Vayikra. Because what are you supposed to do with challah? You give it to a Kohen. It's one of the Matnot Kahuna. That would have been the logical place. Or after Parshat Korach, open up to Bamidbar chapter 18 for a second. Bamidbar 18. Chapter 18 discusses the Korach rebellion and the aftermath. Who did Korach challenge at the time? Who did Korach challenge? Moshe and Aharon. So then it was ultimately declared that who is the real Kohen Gadol? It is Aharon. So right afterwards, the Torah takes time, the end of chapter 18, to teach us every mitzvah of giving something to a Kohen. The laws of Truma that apply to grain and to fruit are found in Parshas Korach. The laws of Pidyon HaBen are found in Parshat Korach. Why Pidyon HaBen in Parshas Korach? Because you give the money to a Kohen. If you have an animal that is born firstborn, what do you do with it? You give it to a Kohen. Kohen slaughters it as a korban. So there would be a perfect place to do what? To talk about challah. Because I'm talking about matnot kihuna. So why do I shift it to chapter 15? Says the Rambam. Because the Jew after the Chet HaMeraglim didn't believe God that they were going into Israel. Gave up all hope. Why did they give up all hope? Because they figured God will find something in 20 years to preclude us. He said it's supposed to be in the desert for 40 years. He'll find another excuse after 40 years why we shouldn't go in for another 20 years. And then he'll find another excuse for 60 years. So God gives them a mitzvah which is introduced with the phrase Bivoachem el Haaretz. A mitzvah hatuya ba'aretz, as if to suggest, I am the Rabbi Nishalayim. I am telling you, you will be going into Israel. So the mitzvah in the middle of the narrative is designed to counter the thoughts of Am Yisrael. They were in the post-miraglum mode and believed that they will never get into Israel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu places a mitzvah which hinges upon Eretz Yisrael as if to say, I give you my word that one day you'll be mafrish challah. You will be mafrish challah. Same thing here, according to many. The reason why we're so hung up on the fish is because many, who were this time it's not many, I can count them on my fingers, 8 people, Noah, 3 children and their wives, did not firmly believe that the world will ultimately survive. Because it is impossible to escape the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he'll find some excuse one day, what? Not only to kill how many people there are, 12 million people at that time, but it'll be 12 million plus 8. Plus 8. So the symbol which the Torah conveys, if it's the Pshat or the Midrash, that the world will survive, is the message to the fish. Because the fish have been the symbol, V'yidgu larov b'kerev haaretz. Uridu b'digas hayom. B'digas hayom. So the emphasis here is not that they necessarily we're not commenting whether they deserve to live or don't deserve to live. They survived as evidence that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world to survive and wants to give them a chance, they will have that opportunity. We'll have that opportunity. Hence, we're making a big deal here to understand either they were not impacted by the waters at all, because after all, water can't kill fish, Or number two, even if you accept the pshat that the waters were boiling hot, which waters would ultimately become boiling hot? Only the top level. The lower levels will never become hot. As a result, fish always have a safe haven, and as a result, therefore the Torah tells us they did not suffer. They did not suffer.
But if Hashem wanted all of the water to become hot,
He could have done so. He could have.
So that was His...
That's correct. That's correct. Yes.
But you see, I'm not really clear on your explanation, because Hashem says explicitly after Chaytim Aravim that everyone over the age of 20 will die in the desert and will not go into Eretz Israel.
Correct. So even the point is, even the 20-year-olds, the 15-year-olds doubted it. Because what did they see? Every single adult dying. Every single adult.
But they see Hashem fulfilling what He's promising. Hashem is saying in Perek Yudaleh that...
Well, that's not fulfilling. That's when He's promised it.
Well,
fulfillment will take place 39 years later.
Fine, but He's saying from age 20 and up, and up until now, everything that God has said did come about. Everything. So I just find it difficult to think that that they would doubt this in addition. And as they see everything that's happening, they questioned whether the man really would come a double portion on Friday. They saw that it did. The people who did not believe, they saw what happened. They are experiencing immediate consequences and fulfillment. So that's one question. And the other question with Ramban, when Rashi says...
This comment about the parasha of the Meraglim and the reason why you have the mitzvah, that's the Ramban's theory, that's not mine.
And I really don't understand. Am I wrong in viewing the Ramban as going along with Pshat, and then when not, when he brings Midrash, he tells you, like Rashi?
Yes, he does.
Okay,
he
so
did.
Rashi says...
Rashi doesn't tell you if he's telling you Midrash or Pshat.
Well, he
usually rarely
calls Midrash Rabbah. He'll say, Lefim Shutel, or Midrash Agadah, and then he'll tell you.
That, sometimes. 90% of the time, Rashi just says, quote, makes a comment. It happens to come from the Midrash.
But Rashi, as it overall says, Bami lo bati elo liyashek shutel shel mikra.
That's what he says in Sefer Bereishis. We know it's not true. It's not true.
Really? Because I find...
70 to 80% of the time that Rashi quotes something, it's a Medrash. Without even telling you.
Well, here he's quoting...
A Medrash.
Well, he's quoting Tuma Shaftas. He's quoting the Gemara, and then he quotes the Medrash. When he says, on the Pasuk you said, with Vacharava.
Right.
So, to me, that seems like Pshat. When the Chumash says Charava, and Rashi says...
V'lo Dagim Shabayam.
V'lo Dagim Shabayam. That's pure Pshat.
That's why I ask you, do you think it's pure Pshat? Yet the Ramban says that Kamet is found in Bereishis Rabbah.
Okay, but
so Rashi's quoting Bereishis Rabbah.
But can't the Bereishis Rabbah also go by Pshat?
Unlikely.
Does ultimate? Why is this drash? That's where I'm not clear.
That's why I raised that question, because it's in logical terms. It's impossible to imagine that if God can kill every living creature, He can kill the fish too.
He can.
Of course He can.
Right.
So why would the fish be an exception?
So for the various explanations that you've been giving...
Okay, so that's all Midrash.
Why?
Because otherwise the text would have to say it black and blue. And the text doesn't say any reason why the fish would be spared. So we have to assume that the fish have died like everybody else. That's what we'd have to assume. So the Midrash is coming and saying, no, only Becharava, v'lo Dagim Shebayam. Rashi is quoting a Midrash, black and white.
Yeah, but maybe that's also Pshat.
It might be.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It might be.
It's the real letter of the word.
It might be. It just might be. That's why I asked that question the first time we read it. Do you think? So many of you said it was the Pshat.
When it says Ayin Tachazayin, and everyone knows that according that it means Mamon and not Mamash, is that Pshat?
Is what? No, of course not.
It's not.
Mamon is Midrash Halacha. The only difference is, here, you and me, and anybody in this room, has a right to speculate and comment about the Midrash. because it's Midrash Agadah. So you want to say the Midrash is correct, that the fish didn't die? You have a right to say that. You want to say, you want to challenge the Midrash? You have a right to say that too. That they did die, like everything else. And your inference is incorrect. Becharava v'lo shebeya. Incorrect. When it comes to Midrash Halacha, you and me, nor anyone else, has a right to challenge it. So when Chazal say, ayin tachas ayin, this week's parsha, does not mean an eye for an eye, it's not the pshat. That's the midrash. That it means mamon. The pshat means ayin tachas ayin. But we have no right to challenge it. And we can't institute the law according to the pshat. Because we believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. Yeah.
Pardon me, I don't understand. So,
the
shot is that the fish died, even though they're not mentioned, and only things with nostrils that breathe.
That is correct.
So, the shot is that the fish died.
Okay. No, that is exactly the point why they did die, according to the simple pshat. The Ramban said it was the change in the word from 21 to 23, from vayikva to vayimach.
Okay, so how do then the question explain the existence of fish if they weren't brought up?
I don't know.
Nobody explains it.
Nobody explains it. If you assume that they, as the Ramban did initially, that all fish died, they melted like we died. I was melted, the fish was melted. How did they survive after the Mabul? If we know that Noah did not save them, well, what would you say then? What would be the answer? Well, Noah took some fish too. He brought some fish. He had jars. And he saved the, just like you have a,
aquarium.
An aquarium. You had a little aquarium on the boat. No, that's all impossible. In fact, that's what the Ramban believes is the pshat, that they died. Because of the change from vayikva to vayimach. That's exactly what he said at the beginning. Yes. I don't know.
What's the English?
How did the Yonah and the Orev survive in the first place? You know? Yes.
He took the bread.
Okay, so he sent them out. Yeah.
If the rain was really boiling, then the birds would have melted.
Yes. But that's why he had to save every bird in the teva. Yeah.
We go by the drash with the fish swimming to the bottom of the ocean. What about sea mammals that need air?
I can't answer that question.
Is the idea of my world claim shaft or drash?
According to the Ramban, it's a medrash. But it's predicated on the word vayimach. Yes. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two that I want to make is something that Radak says, which I blew my mind. Blew my mind. Look on the left-hand side of page Kuftet. Vayigberu hamayim al aretz chamishim u'masyon. How many days did it actually rain? We were told. How many days did it actually rain? 40 days. But the effect of the Mabul was felt for what? 110 more days. Me'a u'ma'as chamishim u'ma'as yom. 150 days. It's like when it snows for an hour, you feel the effect for a couple of weeks later. We know that. So that's what happens here. So now look at the Radak's comment. Siper, the Torah tells us, Kama yamim hayahag barat hamayim. How long did the waters have its impact, its powerful impact, after the rains had stopped? V'haya me'a v'chamishim yom. 150 days, the impact of this water. Now says the Radak, V'chol zeh yada Moshe Rabbeinu, alav hashalom, beruach hakodesh, Kishar hadvarim hasfurim. Wow. What issue is the Radak introducing to us? What issue is he introducing to us? How in the world did Moshe know that it was 150 days? So that's what the Radak says. Ruach HaKodesh. Let's assume Moshe never had Ruach HaKodesh. Exactly. The simple pshat is, how did Moshe know? Because HaKodesh Baruch Hu said, write down these words. Here, Mo, take a pen and start writing. And this is what I'm telling you to write. No, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Vayigra, Moshe, he hasn't, any child could not figure it out. Chamishim u'ma'as yayim, 150 days. What do you need Ruach HaKadosh for? So the Radak claims that Moshe's recording of all episodes, Asurim, all episodes of the narrative that precede Moshe Rabbeinu, were communicated to Moshe through Ruach HaKodesh, and that's why that's how he writes it down. That's exactly what he writes. Read it again. Siper kama yamim hayahak barasam vayomeh v'chamishim yom v'chol ze yada Moshe Rabbeinu beruach HaKodesh kishar hadvarim hasfurim.
What's kama hadvarim hasfurim?
All things that will have been told, narrative of the Torah. How did Moshe Rabbeinu know that on day number 3 God created X, Y, and Z? How did he know? Because he had Ruach HaKodesh. When you tell me about Ruach HaKodesh, what does that normally mean? If you're told that somebody has Ruach HaKodesh, no, that's not Ruach HaKodesh. He has the capacity to foresee certain things. That's when you have Ruach HaKodesh. There are various types of foreshadowing events. Number one is Nivu'ah. That's number one. Number two is Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is a lower level of Nivu'ah. Rashi tells us this many times, that Ruach HaKodesh is a lower level of Nivu'ah. A lower level. So Moshe needs Ruach HaKodesh. First of all, Moshe was the greatest Navi that ever lived. So he has much greater. But Nivu'ah Ruach HaKodesh does not give you the capacity to do what? To tell you what happened in the past. It tells you what, gives you an opportunity to tell you what's going to happen in the future. You can see, God shares with you in advance what is going to happen. Either he speaks to you clearly, as he did to Moshe, as he spoke to Moshe, or he speaks to in riddles. You're in a dream, and God appears to you, and you have to try to figure out what he said. But no Navi is told any Nevuah about something that happened in the past. So the answer, how did Moshe know? Very simple, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him.
Right.
So if you were asked to be the editor of the text, you don't have to be a great Ruach HaKodesh or Navi to know what's going on. You don't have to know that. Just listen, take your pen and write it down. Yeah.
So I assume that the question is, why did Radak feel necessary to say that?
That's exactly why I'm raising the question. Why? What is compelling the Radak to introduce that Moshe's awareness of that it was exactly 150 days is due to the fact that he has Ruach HaKodesh?
It didn't come down in the Torah kind of thing. It came down like generation to generation to do this.
It
was exactly the way it was.
Correct.
But it has a different...
But why was it... How do they notice this is what happened? Because V'zot HaTorah Asher Sar Moshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael Al Pi Hashem B'Yad Moshe. The role of Moshe in writing the Torah, he was an executive secretary. That's what he was. He wrote it down. Nothing beyond that. Torah Shebaal Peh, Moshe began the process of Torah Shebaal Peh. But Torah Shebiksav, Moshe doesn't play a role in Torah Shebiksav. Therein lies the difference between a Navi and the Torah. Nevi'im have inspiration to know what's going to happen. They know what's going to happen, but God didn't tell them these words necessarily. Sometimes it says Kol Amar Hashem. Other times they write about what they think is going to happen in their own words. That's why Nevi'im have a lower level of Kedusha than the Torah itself. The Torah itself is the highest level because it is word for word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nevi'im are not word for word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Ksuvim even less. Even less. There was no direct engagement of speech between anybody who wrote anything in Ksuvim, Esther, if she wrote Megillas Esther, did not speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu once directly. That is Ruach HaKodesh. You have a sense of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would like you to write, and you write it in your own words. But the Sefer Torah is not written that way. So I find it a little difficult to understand what he's trying to drive at. Let's just keep reading a couple of more lines. Lo shiyada Noach kama yamim gavru. Noach had no way of knowing it was 150 days. Here is going to be his point. What would be the obvious way of knowing that it was 150 days? Because Noach walked out of the teva and he kept count. Boy, I've been locked up into this teva 150 days. Wow. And who did he tell that to? His children. So by the time Moshe Rabbeinu comes around to write it down, it could be common knowledge. Because the storybook has already been told 50 times. But Sradak says no. Noah had no way of calculating that it was 150 days. Af al pi shiyada sach ha'arba'im shisholmu yimei agshamim. Even though he knew that the waters rain, the rain had gone for how long? 40 days. Af al pi sheha'emin ba'el. He believed in God. She'amar lo onochi mamtir la'aretz arba'im yom v'arba'im layla. Hu hirgish Yom Shisholmu Yeagesha. Even without a direct word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he could have contemplated when the rain stopped. Why? Because you can hear the rain pounding on your roof. And when it stops pounding on the roof, what happens? You know, it's not raining.
It's so hard. He could see something.
Ah, he's going to talk about the Tzohar. We'll see you in a second. Ki binaflam ateva. Because as the waters were falling on the teva, he knew it was raining. Anybody inside knew it's raining. There was no day and no night. What do you mean there was no day and no night? There was no day and no night during the 40 days of the Mabul? What? Ah, his assumption is that he couldn't keep track of day and night.
So how could he count the days?
That's why he can't. He cannot. Va'afilu hayahu lo ra'a v'lo yada b'toch ha'teva ki kula hayta sigura. The teva was what? Completely locked. So how does the Torah tell us that he waited exactly a week until the waters receded and he sends out what? The Yoreh. And then he waits another 7 days and he sends out the Yonah. How did he know that it was what? 7 days and seven nights. Says, V'yesh lonu lomar ki Noach chacham haya b'inyanei hatvuna. He was a pretty bright fellow. Veheichin lo kelim lishaot hayom v'halayla kimo she'osim ba'alei hamelacha hahi v'yodim ba'hem shaot hayom v'halayla v'afilu lo yiru shemesh v'kochav. What did he bring? What type of utensils could you bring into the teva, not see the sun and the moon, and calculate 24 hours? What can you bring in? Yeah, today you can bring in a watch.
An hourglass.
What?
An hourglass.
Yeah, an hourglass with sand. Yeah. Maybe. What? Who knows? Who knows? But his point is, his point is that Noah could not have known. Now somebody said the Tzohar. How many interpretations of the Tzohar were there?
Two.
One was a Chalon Mamash, and the other one said is what?
Evan.
Good. So which one do you think Radak is operating with?
Evan.
With the Evan. Because if it wasn't Tzohar, you don't have to be a great genius. You look outside the Tzohar, what do you see? The sun. No, you know, that's today a day. It gets dark. That's tonight. The sun appears. You know, it's the next day. So what's his name? Radak believes that undoubtedly there's only one possibility. Tzohar was the stone, so the Teva was completely dark. Completely dark.
But he had to send the word out, so how did he send the word out?
Well, he opened up the door. There was a door. He had to send it out. But he opened up the door. So now, since it's impossible for him to calculate, so now he knows how to calculate already. Very nice. So what question would you ask Radak and challenge what he just said himself? What he just said himself. Good, if he can't, why couldn't he keep track that it was 150 days? And that as a result, who will know about that it was 150 days? Noah's grandchildren, his great-grandchildren. Then you don't have to come up and say that Moshe Rabbeinu got this through what? Through Ruach HaKodesh. So here, Mineu Bei, as we say, the Radak contradicts himself from one line to the next. He writes initially that it's impossible for any human to calculate it. And then he tells us, Noach was this great ingenious person who brought some type of utensils to enable him to calculate it. Well, if that's the point, what did Moshe Rabbeinu having Ruach HaKodesh? What?
The same statement.
100%.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. No doubt. How did Moshe know about the Nachash? How did Moshe know about Cain and Hevel? I didn't know anything. The answer is very simple. Kodesh Baruch Hu told him.
I don't
understand it. I really don't.
What about the circadian rhythms of the animals? Like a bird will get up in the morning.
That might be the Caleb that he's referring to, not utensils, but maybe knowing the patterns of maybe the science of knowing the patterns of animals. That is possible. I'm just showing you that from one line to the next, the Ramban seems to be contradicting his own suggestion. Yes. Right. Because the chalon could be the place where the Evan Shlema was. That's what he calls the chalon. He pulled it out. And the thing that supports that it was this Evan and nothing is because how do you have light? He lit candles. The Radak can suggest he lit candles in the Teva. Pretty dangerous thing, but okay. That's what he claims. Okay. I don't have an answer here. I just point out difficulties. Difficulty is, I don't understand his entire theory. Number two, he just said the reason which I'm compelled to tell you this theory is because it's impossible for Noach to have calculated it. And then 2 minutes later he says, Noach has some way of calculating day and night. Well, if he did, then your whole theory of the first couple of lines is totally for naught. Total waste of time.
What's his footnote 68? Is that the Nundal? Is that the Dar? What's Nundal?
68?
Yeah. On the bottom.
No.
The Shar HaDvarim has to read another 68. What is that?
No, because it's another variation read. HaMesuparim. That's not what it says. It says Hasfurim. So he quotes that as another source.
What's the source?
The Baghdad.
What?
Baghdad. Bet Gimel Dalet.
Oh, that's a Gimel.
Bet Gimel Dalet. In a Baghdad text, it doesn't say it doesn't say Sfurim. It says Misuparim. Because Sfurim means more like counted, and Misuparim is what? What people are told about. Stories that are told about.
Is that Radak's whole take on the whole Torah? That not that Moshe wrote it down from Hashem telling him?
I was waiting for that question to be asked. What will this, who will give energy, what group of people will this be given enormous energy to?
Karaites?
And today?
Various.
Correct.
What?
All those who believe that the Torah was people authored
by J.
Biblical scholars. that there are sections of the Torah and not one person wrote the entire Torah. Why? The Radak says that Moshe did that with his own Ruach HaKodesh. Moshe read it, somebody else had it for Ruach HaKodesh as well. That's why we disagree. Basically, we don't allow for a variety of readings because we believe it's the Dvar Hashem. Dvar Hashem can only be one person. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Radak, you're right, would give enormous credibility to our notion that there is only Torah Achat. That's it. One Torah authored by one person.
This would give it credibility?
I think
the opposite.
No, because it's Moshe with his Ruach HaKodesh.
Oh, so he's saying that all of this is explained by Moshe's Ruach HaKodesh.
Correct. That's how he knew that the events happened. That's correct.
So he's saying that HaKodesh Baruch Hu
did not necessarily record word for word. Correct.
Tell him word for word.
That's correct. It's Moshe's sense and capacity and ability to figure out what happened. That's how he wrote it.
That could be for the whole
talk. That's what somebody just said. That's correct. Precise.
And that's his take on it.
That's his take.
The way the Torah was transferred to Moshe.
Yeah, apparently. Yes.
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll stop here and we will see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers and the aftermath of the Teva.